Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I'm joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and our friend Paul Koch. How you doing, Paul?
Doing well.
Paul has been on the show a number of times, both, like, I think a couple times every year, actually. He was on pretty early in the first year, and almost every time you've been on, the topic has circulated around preaching. So there's a theme when you've come on the show, and I think you were mentioned in a recent episode when Bob Hiller was on to talk about the craft of preaching. Right. And so you're joining us today. But before we do that, I just want to remind everybody that 1517 has been upping the amount of resources that it's producing during the sort of COVID-19 lockdown and pandemic. And so if you've been looking for things to do, listen to, read, study, we've been doubling down on the amount of resources we've been producing, not only podcast-wise, but YouTube channel. So you should go check that out. We've always had a YouTube channel, but it's always sort of been just post-conference video, and now we're posting up-to-date, made-to-watch videos on there, so you can go subscribe right now. We're trying to make people aware that if you want to get the video content that we're producing regularly, the best way to do that is to go to the YouTube channel and subscribe.
And you just switched over the plugins on the website to be YouTube.
Yeah, new video on the website moving forward will also be YouTube. So if you watch a video from our website, you can go from there and subscribe to the YouTube channel as well.
Little known fact, Caleb now manages the website too.
A job I absolutely didn't want. But yeah, so that's please do go check that out. And then we also do want to thank everybody who has helped us stack up the reviews on Apple Podcasts. I really appreciate the people who don't even use Apple Podcasts.
Who stole their wife's phone and put a review on?
Yeah, who have followed the links in the show notes and gone and done that for us. We appreciate the time it takes to do that. So all right, guys. So we've been doing sort of episodes that have been tied to COVID. We've done episodes on vocational response to this. We've done episodes about what to read, watch, and listen to during this time. And one of the reoccurring themes that I've heard is sort of a sympathy for pastors who are struggling with what to do in this time as we've been trying to navigate resources for congregations and churches. And you guys have been talking about this
All night.
And so thought maybe Paul, as a pastor who has had to navigate this situation, could talk about this a little bit.
Let me give a little bit of setup here. If people have been listening along, we did an original episode kind of when the I think back then it even was just a recommendation to stop meeting. It wasn't even like mandates or anything.
In California, it hadn't been mandated yet.
And so, you know, we did one where with Dan Price where we sort of focused it around that Luther quote that he used in the email when we canceled the city event in Las Vegas regarding for neighbor safety and everything, which seemed reasonable. And I just, for history's sake, I just want to say I believe everyone pretty much thought we were talking about 2 weeks at that time. That was the number that was sort of being given out at the time. Before Paul has, I think, all along had a bit of a different perspective on this, which is why I wanted to have him on. I kind of feel like we've had the, for the sake of neighbor, close down perspective, and we've had the don't be afraid, but also sort of be reasonable perspective. And Paul's got a bit of a different perspective. I did want to say, like, I hope through all of our discussions on this, it's come across that I'm not necessarily advocating for a particular position on this, because I'm not. I've said every time we've done an episode on this, I've said I'm not a pastor. I don't have the job of shepherding a flock, and at a time like this, that has got to be on every pastor's mind daily. Like, what is the right thing to do here? I will say, and so, you know, just for the sake of saying it, this conversation isn't sort of us saying this is 1517's view on position on what you should do, because it's not. This is a conversation between a couple of friends, which is what Thinking Fellows was always supposed to be, kind of listeners eavesdropping in on theological conversations between friends who have been having these theological questions for going on 25 years now. And that's what this show is always supposed to be, and that's what this is. This isn't Thinking Fellow's official position on it. This isn't 1517's, you know. And as this is sort of in process, I don't actually think anybody's got like a hard and fast official position on it.
Well, when we when this show, so as of recording, this is for probably most people week six of somewhat staying at home, either reduced job hours or loss of their job.
So now 4 weeks past the original estimate.
And by the time this episode comes out, it'll be week eight. And right. I'm actually sure a lot of these effects will
still be there.
3 weeks from now, I'm very confident about that fact.
So we'll then at that point be 8 to 10 weeks past the original estimate.
Right.
Right. For how long churches should have, you know, at least reduced operations and everybody. I will say I found and I'm trying to not get too political here because we don't do that, but I have found the response from authorities to churches that I've seen online and other places over Easter troubling.
Yeah.
It seemed like to me all of a sudden coming together, even when congregations were trying to do so in a safe manner that respected social distancing, even people drive up staying in their cars, you know, was all.
Well, some of our original position isn't even valid anymore, because a lot of it was taking the data sets you have, take in the consideration of the makeup of your congregation, the metro or rural area that you're in, and make a decision that keeps your neighbor in mind. And there's, at some level, when the law comes in and makes a demand, you can no longer freely serve your neighbor. And the thing that we saw over Easter was churches were no longer given information in which they could make decisions and even recommendations about what the right thing to do to serve their neighbor was. They were told they couldn't.
Right? Yeah,
they were,
so
all control was taken.
This is where I found some of this disturbing. I mean, I think like even our church was planning on doing a drive-up sunrise service where everybody would stay in their car and nobody would come into contact with anybody, and that was shut down. Mm-hmm. You know, we were going to drive down for that. I wouldn't say my position on it has changed. I think the variables have changed, which has frightened me a little bit.
Right.
And so then talking with you last night was interesting. So anyway, I just wanted to say that before I sort of like said, this is Paul Koch. He is a pastor of Grace Lutheran Church in Ventura, California. He's the executive editor for our Craft of Preaching project at 1517. He's also one of the main preachers on our For You radio podcast, as well as the, I guess I'd say, co-host of the Ringside with the Preacher Men podcast.
Yeah.
You're a busy guy.
All over 1517.
Yeah. Yeah. So
happy to be so.
Yeah. So, Paul.
Go
for it.
So, it is interesting, the conversations we've had these days. I don't know. Let's see. I don't know how to kind of start this. As people probably know by now, I didn't close my church, and we held normal, regular services up until Good Friday. My sanctuary is fairly large. We were very diligent with our members and encouraging those who were high risk, you know, to stay home. But the church was going to be open. We could certainly, with kind of the devastation in numbers at that point, we could easily practice social distancing well spread out throughout the church.
So people were making personal decisions not to come to church, right?
Yeah. So, and the goal was always, I don't want anyone to feel wounded by, like, in some way they're unfaithful by not coming because they're concerned about their health or something like that. So we went to great lengths to do that, to have open communication. But for those who wanted to come to church, we were still there, and the church itself remained open.
So let me just put this in perspective for you, because I can be kind of objective. I've gone to your church a lot. And when he says it's a fairly big building, it's an actually big building. Yeah. I mean, it could probably seat 400 people, I think. And I know, you know, back in the day when they had the school and everything,
that was big. Yeah,
it was. There was a lot of people in that.
Yes, so we're down. We're down to 50, maybe.
Yeah, and so you're down to 50, which means that almost you could have almost one person in every pew. You could certainly have a family unit like every third
and
pew.
And that's exactly what they did. People sat in family units. Yeah. They sat with their family, and they spread out all over the church.
I mean, you could easily never come into contact with another person in that sanctuary with this.
Yeah, so we did things like I stopped shaking hands at the door. We actually canceled our like Bible study, Sunday school, the things afterwards.
Smaller building.
But you were still coming to receive the gifts, and that to me seemed important. That all changed. Palm Sunday out in Ventura County, there was a pastor who, got himself on the. On the news mm-hmm. and made a big ordeal about it, which brought massive community opposition.
Yeah.
And then so somebody reported us that we were meeting, and then that started conversations throughout Holy Week with points of contact in the city. Who were
high-level points of contact.
Yes. Ended with conversations with the chief of police, who was a wonderful man. We actually had great conversations, and we promised to go get a beer after this is all over. So it actually ended really well.
Yeah. Once one is allowed to go get a beer.
Yes, once that's allowed, yeah. So anyway, we went through all that, and so we modified for Easter. And what we did for Easter was we did really small little gatherings. I pre-recorded the sermon, did all that kind of stuff. And so the congregation got a message directed to them with the sermon and all that. But those who wanted to come and receive the gifts, confession, absolution, and Lord's Supper, were still able to. It basically made a long day for me. Like I was there all.
Yeah, one at a time.
Yeah, just this like trickling in.
Yeah.
And we couldn't keep too many people there. And. We were
had somebody at the door making sure
at the door. That yeah, everything was
exceeding the number and all that.
And so that's what we've done. But still to the point is the church is still open. And for that means something, I think, to the members and to me, because I think when we take that we're going to stop meeting for the sake of saving a life or something like that, that you might get sick and therefore you can, you know, you might be asymptomatic, but you can pass it to grandma. Now grandma's going to die. I don't actually think that's justification enough. I think that's sort of the reality of living in any sort of community.
Sure.
So,
I mean, trust me, every time I'm around people, I get sick. So yeah. I get it.
Yeah. So, so there was a way in which, I felt it was important. Now, my struggles have been throughout all this was, am I doing this for my kind of personal arrogance and kind of pride? Cause my gut is always to go against sort of, bureaucracy anyway. So
this is true.
Yeah, so is that what's doing it? And am I truly putting people at risk unnecessarily, right? Or is this, am I loving my neighbor by going to whatever lengths I can to make sure they can still receive the gifts of Christ, which is actually what I've been called to do. And I guess I would say I've erred on that side, and I've said we're going to do what we can to keep this going.
Well, listen.
And now we're rolling a month deep, where a lot of churches have
6 weeks. I think
have just they've been shuttered well, for that long.
And some of it too was, you know, a lot of the justification had to do with these really
extreme
vast
scenarios.
Models
yes.
of,
yeah.
Like you know, the governor of California saying 50% of Californians
26
are going to get
people
this.
Were gonna contract coronavirus
you know, and then having you know, this is always a problem with sweeping orders or regulation of any type. Is it doesn't take into account the differences in localities, even in a state. So where we are right now in San Bernardino County, there's over 2 million people and there's 900 cases, which is less than a quarter of a percent.
If you were to drive through San Bernardino County, you'd understand why that is, right? Because it's a huge, vast county.
It's massive, yeah, and it's really rural.
It's not like New York City. In fact, I was listening to, as on my hike this morning, I was listening to a podcast where somebody was talking about how much easier California's had this than New York, even though they have vast metropolitan population centers.
Because we're spread out.
Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, the person who said that doesn't understand that there's literally no comparison between Manhattan and Los Angeles. No.
People don't take a subway to work.
Yeah, I mean, Los Angeles is a vast population center, but it is extremely spread out. I mean, most of the places where people live, even in the city of Los Angeles, are individual little ranch-style houses that were built in the 40s and 50s.
And when people refer to L.A., it's more often the county. I mean, when people say I work in L.A., they're not usually saying downtown.
City. Well, and it's not. Yeah. I mean, people aren't on the whole. I mean, some are, but aren't on the whole living in high-rise apartment complexes and things like that where they're face-to-face with one another in an elevator and even to go get essential services like groceries. And so this is it's a different area. Like, it's just it's a different thing. And to boot, I'm just going to say this for the sake of defending Paul from some of his critics here. Ventura County has had the lowest number of cases of any county in California. And so the number of contracted cases in Ventura County are exceptionally low and have been through this whole ordeal.
Yeah. So
I think,
yeah. So
also lowest number of deaths in California by county.
So where other people saw this as an opportunity to kind of demonstrate love for neighbor by closing church, I always saw that there was a danger in subordinating the doors of your church to the government in some way, right? To some other bureaucracy. And that, so those who have closed, even if now, let's say they're saying, man, it's going on 6 weeks. And
I'd really like to open.
I'd really like to open. They've told all their members, and their leadership is all on board with, no, no, we close until the government now. We're beholden to them to open this up. And so this has done other things that the church truly wasn't prepared for. And by church, I mean individual congregations were not prepared for. And that is, what does it even mean to be, to live stream service?
Or to try to figure out communion in a different way other than face-to-face.
Yeah, so like... you listed earlier all the things at 1517 I'm involved in, right? And I've done this stuff for a long time, some of it. I'm not foreign to using...
Online media.
Yeah, online media, right? And yet, we've always had conversations where, in the discussion that these are crucial tools for the church, but it's not church itself.
Yeah, agreed.
And so now...
disdain the tools, but at the same time, don't equate the tools to the thing.
If somebody says now, like you'll see things like, hey, join me for church this Sunday, you know, because you can just log in and we'll all join church. If that's what I'm doing, to be honest, what I would do is I would come to you,
and
Scott,
just work for 1517.
And I would say, listen, why don't you just pay me because your audio equipment's better, your video's better, your editing team's better. We can put out a way better product, gather more people, and let's just do that. Like, why? So there's just a lot of questions that aren't being asked about this stuff. I mean, I know you can do it. But what does it mean to do it? And how does that shaping the individual, especially, and these are the ones I worry about because I struggle with those who go through moments of real doubt in crisis of their faith where they say, man, what is this meaningful or not?
Yeah.
And now the churches are just closed.
Yeah.
That's hard, man.
Yeah. It's tough. Like, and I want to say that you bring up a good point because we've sometimes been criticized for like trying to take over what the church does, and that's never been our intent at all. We've always our intent has always been to support local congregations in their work.
To provide
resources for those pastors and absolutely. Those local congregations to make it easier for them to do their work better with their people.
When you guys had Bob on and we were talking about craft of preaching, one of the things you guys talked about with him was that you were, you know. We on Craft Preaching, we don't put sermons up. Like that's not the point. Yeah. Isn't to say here's a bunch of sermons you can then use.
Go read it.
You know, it's rather to give you the tools, which is a harder thing to do. but to help you to engage even in that task.
With conferencing, I recently had somebody ask, why doesn't Here We Still Stand go through Sunday?
Yeah, because are the pastors that come to the conference have to get back to their churches?
Yeah, that's right. Because right. a lot of these guys fly back Saturday night in order to go serve the churches, and that's what exactly we want why them we to do.
That's why we don't do anything on
Sunday. Yeah, but year I go, I have to drive home Saturday, get back for church usually.
Yeah. So we try to end it early enough on Saturday so that pastors can get home to serve their churches. Because we believe it to be, at least in part, a place where pastors can come to be fed with the gospel themselves so that they can be reinvigorated to go preach that gospel and hand over the gifts to their people, not to replace the pastors.
Right.
And it seems like at a time like this, you know, I don't want to make anybody feel bad for what they've done and the hard decisions that they've made based on, you know, advice.
I don't think anyone made light decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, they all
advice of elders and councils and maybe even counsel on what to do, but it has been I have noticed a distinct sort of difference between people, even if they've provided online content, who have provided that online content only to their people, like as their pastor to their people, and people that have like now sort of become the pastor for the internet, you know, and it's out for everybody.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think either one is necessarily right or wrong. I do think there's probably a philosophy difference there.
Yeah, but see, this is where that the medium is often underestimated, what it can do and how it can shift things. Because so I have a lot of friends that are pastors. Well, okay, I have some friends that are pastors, and
a lot of acquaintances that are pastors. Yeah.
and the guys I know though, and I know what they're doing. And now, and when I talk to them recently, if they're doing like online streaming things on Facebook Live or whatever, they'll say, "Man, but on this sucker, I had like 1,500 people watch it,
and only 75 people in church."
Yeah. So it's this. What does that even mean for you as a pastor? And what does that mean for those people that are watching it?
Right? They've called you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, see, these are the conversations I don't think people are having. And maybe that's part of my caution too. And that I wonder, we all look around us and we see this kind of massive overreach of government right now, and I think a lot of people are starting to wonder.
Probably not everybody agrees with. I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably not everybody agrees.
Well, that's
with
for
that.
Sure. But a lot of people, no doubt, no matter where, whether you think it's warranted or not warranted,
is you're seeing more involvement than normal.
Yeah, people, I think on all sides are realizing that things are not going to just snap back to what they were. This is changing the landscape.
Yeah,
to some degree, right? And I think churches need, like, this is going to change. So let's say you go and now you're streaming all your services.
Yeah.
And this is church now, right? Yeah.
Is the expectation for you to continue?
Yeah. So now we go back and you got folks trickling in a church.
So now you're a pastor and a video editor.
Yeah. And so, and can you even do both of those?
No, you can't.
And can you do them well?
Probably not.
And so, I mean, that's a lot of, like I said, at that point, I come work for you.
Yeah. There's a certain thing that we have to deal with all the time when you're doing digital media like a podcast, which is that the audience is very general, right? So you'll say one thing, you have to be more careful because you don't know who's listening. You're trying not to scare away people who are new to the faith or new to your tradition in ways. And sometimes that means that you don't say things you would say to
people in your congregation. Say in a sermon at your church.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you can't address, it's harder to address those specific people because now you're just sort of doing this general sermon.
And so when we talk about like craft or preaching, that's a different thing. So last Sunday, then I preached to kind of nobody. I mean, there's a few people there or whatever. Right. And it's being recorded. It is a different experience to do that task, but it's also, if I go long enough that way without my congregation there that I'm called to serve, in the preparation for that sermon, you're going to, like you said, now it starts becoming more general. It becomes like, you know, in our church body, my church body, the, you know, it becomes Lutheran Hour ministry,
yeah,
which is a lots of nice stories and a good punchline and a little twist, very general, because it has to be. Now I can't talk about, you know, your father who died, and everyone in the congregation knows it, and they were at the funeral, and we can refer to it, and we can still grieve together and weep together.
Last week we baptized. Last week we buried. Yeah. Last week we married.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a common experience. You know, it's like, have you ever, when they started banning us using cell phones in our cars, up on your, you know, when you're listening to it, using the handset, it was fascinating. They said, why is that so much more distracting than talking to a passenger in your car? Because when you got a passenger sitting next to you, you can be having the same conversation you would be over the phone, but you now have an extra set of eyes in the car, like, you know,
helping you see things you're missing,
even if you're kind of spacing out, you're getting emotional in the conversation or whatever, or you just want to tune it out. You actually have another body that changes the dynamic of what's flying down the road now. And that's a real reality in the life of the church. When you have people together, I can speak the same words.
Or at least similar.
And post it, right? And people can see it and respond. But that's very different than when you're sitting next to or in front of or 6 feet away from a person, and you know what they're going through, and it's reflecting on you, and that changes the whole ethos of the moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, past 6 weeks has been tough, right? I mean, I think, until we were talking, I think I had my limited capacity to have sympathy for, you know, the situation pastors have been in. But talking to you last night, you know, and just you started telling me the actual angst that you've been going through with this, it was different to me, because before that it was theoretical, right? Yeah. This is like, theoretically I can understand that this is hard for pastors.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, and talking to you last night, it's like, no, this has been devastating. Devastatingly hard, at least.
Well, I would say, I know last night, you know, I was drinking some rye too. That always helps. Yeah. But
put a little sauce on the story.
but it was, you know, I was, I think, being fairly honest that, you know, throughout my career, and everyone of course knows this theoretically, but pastors, just like anybody else, go through times where they have real legitimate doubts, not just doubts about some point of doctrine or something, but you know, about
the big doubts.
What am I doing? What is any of this even matter?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And I was kind of struggling with some of that, and it, you know, had to do with people in my life who were, I also surround myself with a lot of non-believers.
Unbelievers, yeah.
And sometimes that weighs on me. It's like, what the heck, you know? Yeah. this is my profession. I ought to be, you know, fairly good at this. And I was struggling, and then that all this came down at that same time, and like within a week, I'm turning around, and churches are shutting their doors, and I'm like, well, then does any of this matter? it was very personal at that point for me.
And
I can't be the only one, and I'm certainly there's a lot that are not pastors that go through this all the time.
Yeah, well, that's not an objective comment on what to do or not do. It's it's a recounting of the fact that, you know, in your particular situation, or at least the sort of the life that you've chosen, you do encounter a lot of unbelievers who end up having a lot of questions for you. And you told me a great story last night about how, you know, you putting yourself in those situations has led to at least one family.
Sure.
Who is now a member of your congregation
and
baptized themselves, in the, you know, have themselves baptized in their children, you know, and their whole house, as it were. But having sort of been in that situation before in some of my previous jobs, you know, it is a different kind of trying. Like when it's different having like an academic discussion about the doubts people might have than it is actually talking to people who have doubts.
right?
Yeah. Or don't know or are fully objectionable, and that does weigh on you. I mean, it weighs on you in a wholly different way, and I can see how it would be definitely difficult to look at somebody that you're trying to convince that this is the truth above all other truths,
yeah,
and to just say, well, now we're going to shut it down.
Yeah, and so the big concern or fear was, you know, for so many people, the church, the local congregation or whatever, they view it as a non thing and something that's not crucial at all. And then like that, I think that was my gut reaction when I heard Place Your Come, and I'm not saying this was anyone's intention, but that was the way it hit me, was you've kind of now assured them.
Yeah.
That it is a,
I think,
as we say now, a non-essential service. This is not.
Gosh,
if
there's one really bad thing besides the deaths and the sicknesses come out of this, it's the new set of buzzwords.
Yeah, right. Non-essential, yeah. Well, social distancing.
I think this is a really good point, because for a long time, you know, sort of secular culture has been working, and it, you know, most Christians I talk to are people who would just say they're Christian when you meet them or have, you know, drinks with them or something.
Sure.
Their faith is really optional. It's a personal decision that makes their life
moral
better.
Therapeutic deism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's something they choose that other people may not choose, and it's whatever your path is. I mean, I run into this a lot where I kind of assume I'll meet people up here who are non-religious, and they'll say, no, I just don't go to church, but, you know, I'm a Christian. Or even they'll say, I'm a Christian, but, yeah, you know, I don't force it on anybody. All this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, this really did double down on church is a personal thing that you choose to live with that makes your life better, but that you don't really need.
Yeah. Well, that may or may not make your life better, but that, right, you don't really need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's good, yeah.
And I think there's some danger to that, and I wouldn't,
there's probably a lot more danger to that than we even yet realize. Mm-hmm.
I think there'll be ramifications for this for a long time.
Yeah. And like I said, I was fairly, again, at the risk of getting political, I was fairly terrified on Easter, because I've never been a big one with the Christianity as a persecuted religion in America.
Sure.
I just have been like, really? I mean, like, still like 60% of people still claim to be Christian, sure, and even politicians.
There's 10,000 people in 6 churches in Big Bear.
Yeah, I mean there's even if politicians sort of hedge their bets, they usually, if you get them to break into prayer, break into like some semblance of a Christian-ish prayer, mm-hmm, and all, sure, this stuff. And so I'm like, but the scenes from Easter were
scary.
They were scary. Yeah. It was scary how quickly government officials would forcefully enforce, in my opinion, questionable orders.
Yeah. Especially things like the and forcefully, know, the parking lot churches and stuff.
And forcefully, yeah, enforce. Not just enforce. And I'm sure the vast majority of police officers that were asked to do something about this, the vast majority of them were calm, kind, right, people who were going in to peacefully ask people to disperse. And I'm sure that's the case. Yeah. Right? I'm sure that's like the vast majority of responses to this. But so, the hyperbolic, yeah, scenes of the number of people, the number of, yeah, enforcement officers that,
or threats that, you know, we will,
yeah, so
enforce, you know, these questionable people know, orders.
Like, where I live, our chief police, who, you know, who I got to kind of know a little bit, he was so humble. Like, he was, yeah, like, he called and said, listen, I don't want to do this, you know, yeah, and I don't, and I just, and he was basically calling me like, what can we do? Where are we, you know, he's like, I don't want to send my guys out to break up anything at a church. So how can we? And so I said, here's a plan. This is what I'm going to do. And he's like, okay, you know, we can roll forward with that, you know? And, yeah, so it was,
no, and I'm sure no that's gathering. The vast majority of cases, right?
But you see it, right? Yeah. All of a sudden it's public.
It frightens me more now than before. And I'll just, I guess I'll kind of leave it at that. Cause, yeah, I don't want to get, I don't want to turn this into.
Yeah, because you don't know the context
Lutheran,
of what prompts.
Lutheran talk radio.
Like you don't know if there were videos going around of, you know, I saw one where 20 or 30 cop cars showed up to a church in order to prevent people from coming doing a parking lot service. Yeah. You don't know if the pastor was antagonizing those police before that.
Yeah.
You don't know any of that, but it does make you realize that there is a button that can be pushed where the state will enforce things against a church.
Yeah. Which previously, because I didn't imagine this, right? And you're talking to a guy that's read books about the 1918 flu pandemic, right?
Yeah.
And I still didn't imagine this. I did imagine, you know, and that's interesting to me. And so I'm not trying, again, I feel like I'm really hedging my bets.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Right. I'm not trying to make any conclusions here. I'm just trying to say that this was Easter beyond being interesting because it's the first time in our entire lives, you know, that we've done an Easter service only at home. I don't think it's the first time we've done like a devotion on Easter at home or sung a few hymns on Easter at home, but it's the first time that that's all we've done. Mm-hmm. And that was really different. Watching my little grandchildren of now 4 and 2 try to wrap their head around the fact that church was the dinner table. At 4 and 2, I mean, they
kept asking, are we going to church?
They know,
like, throughout the day.
They know fairly well what to do when they go to church.
Yeah.
You know, but like
around the dinner table is a different story.
Was a different story. And like we played a sermon, one of Donovan Riley's sermons. Yeah. And they didn't know what to do while the cell phone is playing a sermon. It's like,
what does this mean?
What is this? Yeah. You know, and it was just an exceedingly different experience. And then I didn't really see many of the scenes online, but Caleb was sure to share them with me.
And another thing I think is that is involved in here. It's, I think, I know when C.S. Lewis in his Four Loves talks about friendship, he speaks of it in that beautiful way of at its core, it's a rebellion, right? And it's because when you have friends together, right, this is the seeds of resistance or something like that. I think G.K. Chesterton in his collection of essays on What's Wrong with the World, I think it's called, he talks about, because he's so concerned about property and having a place to call your own and a place to gather, right? And both of them in different ways, I think, kind of paint this picture that when you don't have the ability to gather, you don't have the ability to resist or to make any sort of stand or to cause any sort of rebellion, even if that rebellion is the gospel.
Yeah.
You know? And so and that applies certainly politically or in our personal lives, but it certainly, I think, defines a lot of what the church is. And I think a lot of people are longing for that again, or what it could be again.
I'm good to wrap up there. I want to read something though. My wife and I, when we're up here, there's a bunch of walking trails right out our front door. And, when this first started, maybe like 3 weeks ago, she was taking one of the dogs for a nighttime walk, and she texted me this picture of something that somebody had pinned to a tree in our little, I guess I'll call it a neighborhood of cabins up by us, that's from C.S. Lewis in 1942. And for those that don't really sort of remember some of the history, 1940-41, England and London had endured, I think, I wish Adam were here, 57 days of the Blitz, where Nazi Germany bombed not only England, but central London for many days. Over 40 some odd thousand people died during the Blitz. But one of the big goals for the people at that time, it's where if you've ever, you know, seen the sort of now cliche signs that say keep calm and carry on, that's where they got that from, right? Because one of the goals was to not allow the attempt by the Nazis to ensue absolute terror on the people of England, not to let that take hold. And so after the Blitz every day, the legions of people from the neighborhoods would come out and clean up neighborhoods, and stores that weren't bombed would still open, and just amazing. And in 1942, just after that, C.S. Lewis writes this, says, first, Satan, quote, "I will cause anxiety, fear, and panic. I will shut down businesses, schools, places of worship, and sports events. I will cause financial turmoil," end quote. Jesus, quote, "I will bring together neighbors, restore the family unit. I will bring dinner back to the kitchen. I will help people slow down their lives and appreciate what really matters. I will teach my children to rely on me and not the world. I will teach my children to trust me and not their money and material resources. I will teach my children to trust in Jesus." And I think one of the things that more and more for me as this time goes on, and everybody I'm sure is sick of talking about it, so we'll, next episode we post after this will be something not COVID related, is just what you said, that in order to be a family, right, either be that your own family or the family of God, at some point it requires coming together.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening to this episode. I'm sure people will have all sorts of comments on it. You know, again, I don't want to feel like it's backstepping, but you know, this isn't, none of this was an attempt to try to tell people what to do, but was instead to see how there have been attempts to do other things that we're still also trying to serve neighbor, and how it's valid to ask questions about what the right response is in sort of times of panic like this.
Well, and like I said, we've, I think, faithfully presented the other options.
Right.
And so to have somebody on to tell their experience of, you know, a possible third alternative or third way, I don't think is a bad thing. And I hope people receive it reasonably, as we've attempted to pass it over.
All righty. Well, thank you for listening to this episode. We'll catch you next time. Bye.